Kate from New Jersey. It's the SNL Nerds, isn't it? It's the show where two blokes from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. All because Darren Patterson and I.
I'm your co-host, John Trump.
Yeah! Love it. That was okay, right?
No, well, that was hilarious because you were intentionally pulling back your horrible British accent to try and make it sound more acceptable.
Yeah.
It was funny in that.
Yeah, listeners, I made the mistake because I always look, listeners and fans will know, like, I love doing the British impression, the accent.
Yeah.
From time to time on its podcast. Well, the other day I made the mistake of actually recording myself and listening back to myself. And to my chagrin, I heard, like, oh, this isn't as good as I thought it was. I thought I was killing it this whole time, and it's barely passable.
It's like Dick Van Dyke in Mary Poppins, and then several notches below that is you.
Yes.
With your British accent.
I'm Dick Van Dyke's stand-in.
Right.
Yeah. So that was me, like, that was me really trying. That was me really just putting in the work, putting in a British accent for you, the good people.
And that's what made it so damn funny.
I'm sweating.
So as you might expect from this rather unusual intro, this week we're covering the premiere episode of SNL UK, the new British version of Saturday Night Live. This is going to be interesting. See how this works.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that's been in the works for a while now. And, you know, they have SNL in other countries as well. I believe that there's one in Korea, and there's been adaptations in, like, Japan and Spain and Italy. But, like, this is the first time. Oh, Quebec as well. But this is the first time they've done it in the UK on the Sky Network, and it's like it has like Lawrence Blessing, and he's like a producer on it. So this is like an official version of SNL across the pond.
Yeah, yeah. So very unusual, you know. It's very interesting, and it struck me when I was like getting ready to watch this. I was like, this is like the first time, and I don't know how long, where I've watched an episode of SNL and I didn't know who any of the cast members were beforehand.
Yeah, yeah.
Because SNL, like, ever since 1995, it's been sort of like this gradual turnover of people. And even when the last time Lorne did a near complete makeover of the cast, he still carried over a few people like Mark McKinney and Norm Macdonald and David Spade and Tim Meadows.
Mm-hmm.
I'm maybe forgetting one or two in that, but it's completely new to me. I don't know if everybody on this was new to you.
Everybody on it was just brand spanking new to me. I mean, just because with British comedy, I grew up with it. I do enjoy it. I'm a fan of British comedy, but I will admit I haven't been, as far as like modern day British comedy goes, I haven't really been keeping up with it. I think that the most recent British sitcom or show I was into was maybe, I don't know, Spaced, the one with Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg, or, Absolutely Fabulous. That's pretty old at this point. I haven't seen anything really recent. So, like, I'm not super familiar with, you know, new up and coming, like, British comedians or sitcoms. Like, the whole British comedy landscape is alien to me, which is exciting, too. Like, I feel like this must be how people back in 75 must have felt when they were watching SNL for the first time, where people were like, who's this Belushi? Who's that? Gilda Radner, what? So, like, it's almost that same excitement of, like, discovering someone for the first time, I think.
Yeah, yeah, same here. I'm also, like, a bit of an Anglophile. I mean, I do love British comedy, but, yeah, maybe I'm not as current on it as I might like the way you are. I've enjoyed a lot of British comedy over the years. Actually, like just a couple nights ago, my housemate and I were watching some John Cleese specials.
There was
a John Cleese thing where he played a descendant of Sherlock Holmes called The Strange Case of the End of Civilization as We Know It. That wasn't very good. It was pretty horrible, actually.
Oh, geez. All right.
There was a thing called, he did just before Monty Python in 1968, called How to Irritate People, which was pretty funny. We saw like a lot of Python sketches in sort of an embryonic form.
Oh, okay.
And there was a really unusual thing called Romance in a Double Bass, which was adapted from an Anton Chekhov story. And he did that with his wife, Connie Booth.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that was neat. Yeah, so it was neat to see John Cleese in some sort of different-ish things.
Okay.
So,
pretty fascinating. I did not know that. But
yeah, so, yeah. I mean, I'm glad this worked out, that this happened to be premiering on an SNL skip week, on an SNL US skip week. Mm. I guess we should say, since I didn't say this before, it is the premiere episode of Saturday Night Live UK. This was host Tina Fey, musical guest Wet Leg. As it's the premiere episode, it is, of course, season one, episode one. Air date was March 21st, 2026, and it premiered on Sky One.
Yeah. And, it took a while to get to Peacock, but, you know, we got it. I guess it takes a while because it's overseas and they got to, like, do whatever they need to do to the recordings over there to get it.
But I think the I think their version might be on earlier in the evening than Saturday Night Live is over here, because I saw the clock that we saw at the beginning of the show when Tina Fey's coming out for a monologue. It looked like it was after 10 p.m. So
yeah, like I did notice like around Saturday night, I think I've noticed that like people on social media were talking about sketches that had just aired, like that day. So like around, I think it might've been like around 8 o'clock our time.
There's a 5 hour time difference.
So. Yeah. So like the show was over by 8 o'clock our time. So, and like, that's when I noticed, like, if you go to the Sky Network YouTube page, they were putting up clips and sketches from that show. So it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and oddly enough, on the Sky TV page, they don't seem to have every sketch from the show up still.
Yeah, that's how curious.
Only certain ones, I don't know, and not all of update either. There's only like a minute and a half of update.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that's about.
I don't know, but I'm glad that we are both Peacock subscribers, so we could just watch it in full.
Yes.
I wouldn't feel quite right judging the show on just like portions that were on YouTube.
Yeah, no, we did the whole meal, not just the appetizers.
We do. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if some of those sketches do pop up on YouTube later on, they might have slightly different titles than what we're calling them here. We're just taking our best guesses here. So,
yeah, this is us being creative and giving it our own titles.
Yeah. So, yeah, bear with us if we're off. Yeah. So, should we dive in?
Let's dive in. Let's do this. This is exciting, man. Good gravy.
This is.
Good
this
lord. Is.
So first up, we have Sir Keir makes a difficult phone call cold open. And this is starting out on 10 Downing Street, where, you know, for you ignorant Americans in the audience, the prime minister lives.
Oh.
And current PM Keir Starmer is afraid to make a phone call to President Trump because he's afraid that Trump will yell at him. Yeah.
What if he yells at me, Lambie? that's how he was doing it.
Yeah, and he's talking like Trump's an abusive boyfriend. Saying, yeah. You don't understand him like I do. I can change him.
Right. So the PM is played by George Foracres. Yep. He feels like he's... Do you remember the show Danger Mouse?
Sure, yeah.
It feels like he's channeling Penfold in order to do this impression. I don't know if I'm the only one that caught that.
You know, I thought when he put on a wig, there was like a slight Martin Freeman resemblance.
Yes, yes.
He was getting a bit of a Martin Freeman vibe from him when he was playing the PM and a couple other parts he played over the course of the night. But he doesn't really look like that as himself. It's just, I don't know, something about him in a short wig.
There is a resemblance. If Martin Freeman ever hosts a show, like I want them to be side by side together, play like, you know, twin brothers or something.
That would be fun. That would be fun. And his advisor, played by Hamad Animashan.
Yes, he's the deputy prime minister, David Lammy.
Oh, okay. And he says, sir, I've taken some steps to help you gain unfounded confidence, so we're bringing in a Gen Z advisor.
Yes. played by Jack Shep.
Jack Shep, one of the younger guys in the cast, and he's just giving him pointers on how to have lots of confidence when you have no real reason to.
He's basically saying Kira's basically trying to set boundaries with Trump while maintaining their relationship, and the Gen Z advisor says he's good at this. He's good at messy drama. He's been in three thruples, and he's currently gay.
Yeah, and Keir Starmer says, "Well, that's great. I'll do anything except take a stand." So he decides to like leave a voice note for Trump, just explaining how and why he can't go to war with him.
Yeah. Do you call it a voice note? I thought that was interesting.
Sometimes I call it voice messages. I've gotten in the habit of calling it voice notes. We tend to call it voice notes in my day job now.
Oh, okay. So, I thought that was just a UK thing. I was like, I always say voice message. I didn't know voice note was the new thing.
I go back and forth. Get with it now. Educate yourself.
We'll get there. We'll get to that.
Educate yourself. but he's urging Trump to remember all the good times that the U.S. and U.K. have had. Like, you know, remember D-Day. Remember the first week of the Iraq War and nothing after that.
Yes. Remember Hugh Laurie on Friends?
Yeah.
Helen Baxendale on Friends?
Yeah.
Or when Friends went to London?
Yeah.
All Friends.
Or when Joey wore all of Chandler's clothes. Friends was very big in the U.K., from what I understand.
Yeah, I get it. There's a charm there.
I mean, and Friends was big, I think, most everywhere, but I think it was particularly big in the UK, and that's why episodes there.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And and then Keir basically tells Trump, like, look, I know you want to start World War III, and that's great, but we don't want to be a part of it, but you can totally use our naval bases whenever you want. Yeah. And then he hangs up, then the deputy says, good work, sir. You did the bare minimum.
And that's all anyone expects.
Politics.
Yeah, I mean, a pretty good opening sketch, and you know, it's honestly something that I wish the U.S. show did a little more of, is addressing the world that Trump is creating without giving us Trump.
I enjoy this cold open quite a bit, and this is some, because they took the, you know, they made the prime minister into a character, and they put him in a situation, and you know, and see how he would react in that situation instead of having him just look into the camera and tell everything that happened throughout the week, which is what we've been getting here in the States. They created a scenario for him to interact in and created a sketch. Like, why can't we do that here?
I don't know. Yeah, it's a better cold open than we've had in a while. In fact, I'm going to say it's the best cold open that SNL UK has ever had.
Right. Ever. Yeah.
Ever. All time.
Yeah. Full stop.
All time. Then we get the opening introducing us to the new cast. Let's see. We'll run through them. We've got Hamad Animishan, Ayode Bembogoy Boy. Yeah, I'm mangling that, I'm sure.
Yeah. That's okay.
Larry Dean, I can handle that.
Bam!
Celeste Dring. George Four Acres, great name.
Great name.
Anya Magliano.
Yes.
Annabelle Marlowe. Al Nash, Jack Shep, Emma City, and Patty Young. So, all new to me.
Yeah, never heard of any of them. The really interesting opening because the music doesn't sound anything like the SNL opening music we've been hearing.
No, it was completely new theme. They've got a female announcer.
They got a woman announcer. They're going all woke.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Women could be announcers now. I mean, who knew?
Women using their voices? That's crazy.
Women being heard and not seen?
I don't know about this.
I don't care for that myself.
This ain't my America. Actually, it's not America at all.
Yeah, and also it's kind of freaky to hear them say live from London. It's Saturday night.
Yeah, there's a bit of
live from New York is just so ingrained in our heads.
Yeah, there's a bit of an uncanny valley there where it's like, oh wow, they wouldn't say live from New York, would they?
Ooh. Yeah, but it's unless they were in New York. Yeah,
makes story checks out. Story checks out.
Yeah. And they announce their host, Tina Fey. Tina Fey comes out for her monologue. Honestly, the studio felt and looked remarkably like Studio 8H to me.
Yeah.
It had the same sort of vibe to it.
Same vibe. It kind of looks like the outside of, they kind of try to make it look like the, you know, like the streets with the, you know, with the lounge neon signs and the club bar signs and live music.
Yeah. We've got a clock prominently placed, and the camera shows that like towards the beginning of the monologue, just like it does on the US version.
Yeah. So
that was kind of neat. I mean, they're obviously aping the US version to a degree.
Yeah. It's like they're aping it, but at the same time, they're trying to make it its own thing. But at the same time, you do see like the similarities. It's almost like a Sliding Doors version of SNL almost.
Yeah, kind of. Kind of. And one, Gwyneth Paltrow gets a haircut and discovers her boyfriend cheats on her or something. I've never seen Sliding Doors.
I haven't either. I just know to reference it in situations like this.
I just know that she gets a haircut in one version, so you can always tell which version, which timeline she's in.
Yes. I do know.
It looked like when Tina Fey came out, it looked like she was having like some sort of wardrobe trouble. She was wearing like this pantsuit thing with a vest, and I think like the top button of her vest came open or something. It looked like she was adjusting that.
Something like that. I thought it was like maybe like the clip mic or something.
Yeah, I don't know if she was adjusting the mic or if like or the first button of her top popped open, but she seemed to just handle that, and the camera like. The camera angles were fortunate that we didn't, you know, see anything that we weren't supposed to.
No nip slips.
She handled that beautifully.
Like a pro.
Yeah, she bragged that she's the youngest person ever to host SNL UK.
Woo! So. You might know her from Mean Girls, or her Sarah Palin impression, which got a huge applause. I was kind of surprised. Like, oh, wow. Sarah Palin still plays in the UK? All right. You might know her from Veep, or, you know, and they showed a picture, of course. Julia Louis-Dreyfus in glasses. Then she said things like, why do a UK version? People have been asking. Well, like so many large-scale operations from the US, no one really knows.
Yep. And she talked about how she can't really understand half the cast members. She says, one boy is either Scottish or choking.
It is kind of hard to tell.
Yeah. And we had our first cameo of the night, because we're doing the tried and true... questions from the audience bit, and we have Nicola Coughlin from Dairy Girls, Channel 4 sitcom, which I have never seen. She's also in Bridgerton.
Yes, also in Bridgerton.
Okay.
But yeah, she asks, you know, and she stands up, she asks Tina Fey, well, why are you hosting? Why not someone from the UK, like David Beckham or Judi Dench or Shrek? Mm-hmm. And of course, Tina Fey, like, Shrek is British? And of course, Nicola says, well, Scotland is in Britain. Educate yourself.
Yeah. And Tina Fey says, it's a very simple question. None of you fuckers would do it.
Yes, but because apparently British people root for the failure of others, which I had no idea. I was like, why? And Tina asks Nicola, why are you people like that? And of course, Nicola says, well, not me. I'm Irish. Yeah. Educate yourself.
Yeah.
I do like the educate yourself runner coming back.
There. Yeah, that was a good callback. And then we have a very unexpected cameo. We have Michael Cera from Arrested Development and Scott Pilgrim and all sorts of stuff who's there for some reason. And he's like, hey, you just swore. You're allowed to swear in this version of the show.
Yeah.
And Tina Fey confirms that, yes. Yeah, because, you know, Britain's less uptight than we are.
Yeah.
Although we like to think of them as more uptight.
But, yeah. And, so then Sarah tries to curse a little bit and he says shitbird and he awkwardly says fuck and whatnot. And, and also Tina Fey asks him, well, what are you doing here? You're not British. And of course, Michael Cera says, yeah, but I'm from Canada. It's part of the Commonwealth. Educate yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
They brought it back.
Yeah. And then, finally we have Graham Norton, show host Graham Norton, who's also in the audience. He says, well, you know, this is usually my studio. And Tina thanks him for using it. And he's like, hey, could I give you like a few tips about some of the quirks of this studio? And she's like, oh yeah. And then he comes up and he's got some note cards and he starts interviewing her.
Yeah.
And because he says he has a gift for making American celebrities likable to a British audience.
Oh,
and
wait, are Americans not likable?
Anyway. Yeah. And so we got into a lot of British comedy references, and Tina Fey just kind of does a whole run through of famous British comedies like Monty Python, Ab Fab, The Office, and Multi Towers, and all that. I like how she says that Benny Hill really messed her up sexually.
It was my awakening, but yes.
Yes.
but yeah, I thought I was good with like knowing a lot of the British sitcoms, but like they were spouting off a few that I wasn't super familiar. I mean, EastEnders I've heard of, but I've never seen it. The Fall and Rise of Reginald Perrin, I'd never heard of.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Yeah, Are You Being Served, I know about, and I should watch it, because like my dad...
I know of Are You Being Served, yes.
Yeah, I know my dad really likes it, but I've never seen it. And Keeping Up Appearances is another one I've heard of, but I've never seen.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then there was also, they kind of modernized it, talking about some TikTok trend, the Nothing Beats a Jet 2 Holiday, which I guess it's like a big TikTok trend over in the UK that I've... not familiar with at all.
Shrugging my shoulders. Yeah.
Got it. Yeah, a fun monologue, I thought. I really dug this.
Yeah. It was fun. You know, Tina Fey, she's an experienced host at this point, so she's pretty game. I think she was a great choice for the host of the first show.
Yeah, so, for sure.
I bet it was valuable having her around for the first show they're mounting over there, since she's an ex-head writer of SNL, so
right.
She knows how the show works in the U.S. in and out, and, you know, but she's probably still sensible enough to let them be their own thing, so.
Yeah, like, you know, it's just a way of being like, hey, and we all know this is like a new thing you guys are embarking on, and no one knows this crew of people or anything, so, like, this is a way of me sort of I guess maybe ingratiating you into the SNL family and, you know, sort of giving you guys a bit of a boost and a start as you find your way.
Teaching them the secret handshake.
Yes, exactly. Letting them know not to look Lorne in the eye when you speak to him. You know, things like that.
Giving them the ritual branding.
Of course. Yeah. Giving them John Lovitz's phone number to make prank phone calls at all hours of the night whenever you want.
Right.
Yeah, you know. So. My phone is ringing again.
Hello.
Hello.
So, all right. Our first sketch, it's a pre-tape. It's a, you know, another SNL trademark. It's a fake ad.
What?
Yes. For an age-defying skincare where you'll look so young that everyone will think your husband is a nonce.
Yes.
I didn't look up nonce, but I sort of get what it means from context.
I looked it up too, and it's exactly what you think it means. Yeah. Basically, a pedophile, basically.
A slang term chiefly used in Britain for alleged or convicted sex offenders, especially ones involving children. Well, that's pretty clear.
Well, he's a right nonce, isn't he?
Yeah.
but yeah.
It's cool that they have their own word for that. We need that. We need to bring that over here.
Isn't pedo enough?
I mean, we need to bring the punishment over here.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
We need to bring that over as well.
We need a lot of people punished.
Like, putting pedophiles in jail. I mean, who would have thunk it?
Yeah.
That's crazy enough. It might just work.
Yeah. People that commit a crime go to jail for it. I guess. I don't know.
But it turns out they're advertising a skin cream called Underage.
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 But of course, it's spelled underage.
Yeah, it's spelled underage with a little accent mark. So it's an anti-aging cream that makes women look so young, everyone thinks that their husband is into underage women.
Yeah. Which,
I mean, very funny premise.
It's a funny premise. Like at one point, one of the guys says, my wife's skin has never looked more youthful and fresh, and it's destroying my life.
Yes. Yeah, they talk about how just like the husbands are afraid to go out in public anymore because everyone's just giving them so much grief. At one point, like when Tina is with her husband, played by
Al Nash,
yes. And she's like, and the stagehand is like, excuse me, little girl, are you okay? Do you know this man?
And he goes, yeah, that's my wife. Yeah. And the guy goes, you sick bastard.
Yeah. And they say at the end it's bipedal day.
Get it?
Yeah. And there's a type at the end. I didn't notice this until you rewatched the sketch. It said, like, no guarantee of your husband being arrested, although he'll certainly be questioned and possibly his hard drive seized.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Yeah. Check it out again. It just flashes at the end. They don't read it or anything. It just appears on the screen.
All right.
This was a funny one. I thought this was probably best of the show.
I would say so. This was a good one. I liked this one. I liked how one of the wives said, yeah, my husband lost his record deal and some, but not all of his fans.
Yeah, sure.
Which is like, oh, wow.
That's happened to a few musicians.
Yeah. Oh, way too many.
Yeah.
But yeah, so far we're off to a good start.
Uh-huh.
Good start. Uh-huh. So next up, we move into The Last Supper.
Yeah, this is our first actual live sketch of the show. So we've got
David Attenborough.
David Attenborough, played by once again by George Foracres, mm-hmm. saying, "You know, I'm David Attenborough, and it can't be long now because David Attenborough is like 99 years old."
Yeah.
At this point.
And from that first line, I was like, "Okay, I'm in. That's fucking hilarious."
Yeah.
And it can't be long now.
He talks about how he's like, I think polls show him to be like one of the most desired dinner guests. So they've decided to, using some of the technology from his brother,
Jurassic Park technology.
Yeah, from his what's the Attenborough who was introduced?
Is it Richard?
Richard Attenborough, thank you.
Yeah.
They've reanimated some of history's greatest Britons for a dinner party. So we've got like the entire cast in here. We got Winston Churchill.
Yeah.
Isaac Newton. Mary St. Cole. I don't think I'm familiar with her.
I looked all of this up because I knew we would be talking about. So Mary, okay. Nurse Mary C. Cole was famous for her nursing work during the Crimean War and for publishing the first autobiography written by a woman of African descent in Britain.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. That's cool. We've got Princess Diana.
That's Jack Shepp giving straight up Zoolander eyes to the camera throughout the whole thing.
We have Tina Fey as Agatha Christie, the famed mystery author Agatha Christie. And Tina Fey, I guess I should say, you know, she starred in an Agatha Christie adaptation, the third Poirot movie that Kenneth Branagh was doing.
That's right. Listen to our
Haunting in Venice, which we covered around last Halloween.
Right. So go back and listen to that, guys. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then we have Benjamin Zephaniah, who is a poet who was awarded 20 honorary doctorates in his recognition of his contributions to literature, education, and the arts. And he was included in the Times list of Britain's top 50 post-war writers back in 2008.
Oh, all right. Well, he was new to me. Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with the next fellow. It was Freddie Mercury from Queen.
Hey-oh!
Yeah. And and then we have Queen Elizabeth, who's famous for being the queen.
Yes.
And lastly, Cilla Black?
Cilla Black.
Black, okay.
Yeah, she's like a singer from the 60s. She kind of came up in that Dusty Springfield era. She had a hit with the song Anyone Who Had a Heart that Burt Bacharach wrote and Dionne Warwick had a hit with.
Hmm, okay.
And then she was also became a host of her own like variety show back in the day.
Okay.
In the UK, of course.
Yeah, so I didn't know three out of that bunch.
Yeah, there were a few of them were very UK-centric.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, this is SNL UK, so, you know, of course.
Of course. I wouldn't expect the average American to know every one of those. But they're debating the question, what makes Britain truly great? And they have to kind of get on with it because the cloning technology only works for 1 hour.
Right. So Attenborough really wants them to have this debate, mm-hmm. this talk about what makes Britain great, but the rest of them are too preoccupied about deciding what starters they should get and who's going to pay. And like, you're like, well, are you getting, you know, shrimp poppers? Because like, if you get them, I'll get them.
Should we get three for the table or should we get four for everybody? Yeah.
Should we do sticky bits?
Yeah.
Ordering croquets.
Yeah. And then ultimately, Attenborough just pronounces it all the experiment is a complete waste of time and money. And then they're going to move over to the lovemaking portion of the evening, which is running on another channel.
Yeah. I thought the sketch ended strong and it kind of petered out a little towards the end. I liked the premise of it, and I liked the start of it, but then as they were kind of arguing, trying to figure out, you know, starters and stuff, it was kind of meandered a bit. I like
the idea of them just getting sidetracked with something utterly trivial, like what sort of starters they're going to order. I like the idea of it more than I like the execution. Maybe if we'd had a little more of Attenborough trying to steer the conversation back on track.
Yeah, I think that was it.
Yeah. So I think that gag would have landed a little harder that way.
Yeah.
So this seemed like it was like halfway there, you know?
It was almost there. There were a lot of things I liked. I liked Princess Di just giving a lot of, shy, coquettish looks to the camera. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people really liked Jack Shep's impression. It's a fun one. And I do like the way they had Freddie Mercury just talk in shouty bits from all his songs. Just, I mean, a bubble. Like, people on the streets.
I think they were all just shouty bits from Under Pressure.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no. Well, I mean, there was the, that's from like the Live Aid thing and Under Pressure, too.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it was just like him singing the scat part in his, the singing scat, not the other scat.
Yeah.
But like him singing the scat part from Under Pressure and people being like, oh, yeah, you're right, Freddie. We shouldn't have to pay for all this.
Yes, there are people on the street.
People on the street! I got a kick out of that.
I was kind of surprised that I don't think I realized that Britain has that much irreverence about Princess Diana at this point.
Yeah, I was surprised that
she was still sort of a sacred cow over there, but maybe not.
I don't know. I thought she was, but maybe because it's been so long, and like there are people now that were born after she passed away, so they don't have the connection really to her like that, like people like us do that were remember who she was and when she was alive. So yeah, I guess it's okay to sort of poke fun at her a little bit now.
Yeah, I guess that surprised me. I mean, the royals aren't what they once were.
No,
probably safe to say.
No, they are not. And a Weekend Update will get to that.
Yes.
Ooh, will they get to it?
So next we had a quick thing. Boovies goes to the movies.
No, it's Boovies goes to the films.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, because like it's so basically it's like this press junket. This guy named Ed Boovies who's interviewing these actors, and he's saying, "Well, welcome. My name is Ed Boovies, and you're listening to Boovies goes to the films."
Hmm.
That's a joke, there, John. That's a joke.
Okay. All right, I missed that one.
Yeah, it wasn't a great joke.
Yeah, and we got Tina Fey and one of the other.
I think it was Shep. I think it was Jack Shep again.
Jack Shep. They're promoting. They're playing two celebrities. They're promoting their new movie, Hot Streak. And Boovies starts out. He's like just praising him. He's like, "Oh, I'm such a fan, and I loved you in this, and I loved you in that, and blah 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 blah." And then finally, he says, "Well, your new movie, Hot Streak. I watched this last night. It fucking sucked. What happened?"
Yeah, it's a big. I remember the first time he said it, it got like a big laugh from the audience. It was just like, "Yes, yeah, it fucking sucked. So like it was so bad, like all the way through. Like what happened?
Yeah,
why did it suck so bad?" And the actor,
it's the awkwardness.
Yeah, the actors were awkward. Like, "Oh, is our PR guy around here somewhere?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, he's out getting me fruit." But this sketch is short. But
I enjoyed it. It didn't overstay its welcome, and I liked the turn on it.
I kind of wish it was, because it's this thing where in the sketch, like after he said it sucks, which is like the big pop in the sketch, then it kind of, they don't really build on that. It's basically like him telling the actors how much it sucks and them kind of just taking it. And then they go to this part where he shows them the movie on his laptop, but we, the audience, can't see it. Mm-hmm. Or hear it. There's no sound, and it's just him reacting to it, and it's like, I don't know, it's kind of quiet in that part. And then he's like, "Oh, this is terrible." Let me close down the laptop, and then I don't know. Like, I feel like there should have been a little bit more something there. Like maybe the actor should have been defending their movie a little bit more. They should have been a little bit more back and forth, but they don't really defend it. Like, "Oh, I'm so sorry," and then it just kind of the momentum just gets killed and kind of
petered out a little bit. Yeah.
And it's like, "Oh, I wish, I think if we really tried, this could have been good, but this movie really just sucks. I just want everything to stop sucking," why does everything suck? And then he apologized.
I ask myself that question every day.
Yeah. Oof.
That's... Why does everything suck?
Why? I mean, I have some answers, but I don't. Yeah. We'll save that for off mic. But yeah, then the actors apologize. He said it's all right. Then he goes back to a cheery outro. Be like, hey, thanks for watching movies, goes to the films. And then he gets some grapes from the PR guy. And it's like, oh, I'll get it. Oh, legend. Thanks, man. Legend, legend.
Well, I mean, grapes are always good.
They're pretty tasty, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never not in the mood for a grape.
This is true. This is true. Next, we had another short sketch called The Budger. This is like a group, like a team of people, and they are all trying to make the internet as bad as possible. We've got one guy who suggests like a long, complicated password instead of a easy to remember password. There's somebody who's in charge of putting small X's on pop-up adverts.
Yes, he called himself the X-Man, and his name is Charles Xavier. I was like, yes. All right, I see what you're doing there.
And there's one person who says like, oh yeah, well, you know, there are certain sites that nobody actually visits. I mean, no one intentionally clicks on Family Guy porn, except for me, because that's like what I'm into. But
but that's only because I like to watch it.
Yes.
Yeah, and then they go to this this scene where, like, the main head guy in charge says it's his job to move the thing online at the last second so you'll click on the wrong thing when you meant to click on something else, which,
yeah,
if you're on your phone, that happens quite a bit. So
you're scrolling and you're like, oh, I'm going to click on this thing, and then it shifts at the last second and you click on something you didn't intend to, usually a pop-up ad or something.
Right, exactly. So it shows them like the whole team kind of staring at the screen, sweating over this, mm-hmm. and like, you know, almost like an Apollo 13 like action scene, like the moon landing. And then they move it ever so slightly, and she clicks on the wrong thing. Then they all celebrate. It's like, haha, that's 5 seconds of her life she'll never get back.
Yeah.
And then the person interviewing them says, well, do you get paid to do this? And they're like, no. But, you know, let me ask you this. Do you get paid for your job? And she's like, yes, I do. Yep. And the guy's like, all right, interesting.
Yeah.
And he has like a long pained look on his face without saying anything.
Yeah. Yeah. This is all right. I enjoyed the idea of it.
So. I thought this was all right.
So it had a little bit of all right.
That was all right. Nice. Yeah. How's your father? Bob's your uncle, yeah? Yeah, not bad. We're doing okay.
Again, it was just like a quick little bit. It was a pre-tape, so it could be a little shorter.
Yeah.
I'd say it worked.
Yeah, I would say so, too. Mm-hmm. Okay, so next up, I mean, I don't think we did the title for this one. It just takes place in, a pregnant woman in the NHS.
Yeah, I just called it Maternity Ward.
Maternity Ward, okay.
So that's where it's taking place.
Done. Let's do that.
Yeah, maybe I'm wrong on that, but that's what I went with, and I feel good about that decision.
I support you and your decision, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad you support my choice.
Yes. Yes. Your title choice, your choice? No, that doesn't work.
Well, so we've got an expected mother, and Tina Fey's like one of the doctors delivering the baby, and they're looking at the baby on the monitor. They've got the...
ultrasound.
The ultrasound, yeah. And we've got another actor dressed up as a baby with the umbilical cord and stuff.
Yeah, the actor is like, it looks like in a room full of red curtains. Mm-hmm. And he's
that's
on like
what wombs look like, yeah.
Yeah, that's what a womb looks like, right?
Yep.
Just red drapes.
Yep.
Red and pink drapes.
Anatomy in high school, yes. Yep. That's what it looks like.
That's what the ladies insides look like. Yeah. So the pregnant woman is getting ultrasound. She's been through 10 hours of labor, and they think that the baby's just being shy, and then they're like, oh, it's okay for a baby to be shy. But then Tina, the doctor, bursts in and says, no, it's much worse. The baby's pretending to be shy for attention.
Right.
And, if they don't correct this, the baby could grow up to be an adult man who's addicted to canceling plans.
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
they say that people who make a big deal about being shy are fake-ass divas.
I mean, you know.
And they're only claiming to be socially awkward when it suits them.
Right.
But like if you invite him out to karaoke, he'll sing his little heart out.
Exactly. And I did like how the mom said, well, look, doc, look, doctor, look, I'm no doctor. I'm just a stupid rocket scientist. But maybe could, I mean, like, could the baby grow up to be like an introverted extrovert? And like Tina says, well, that's pretty much a myth.
Yeah, that's not a thing. Yeah.
It's not introverted, extrovert. You're either one or the other. Don't come on, people. And then they show the baby dancing kind of for attention. Mm-hmm. You know, the doctor saying, look, an authentically shy person would not pop their puss in this manner. Their son is giving cringe and only claiming to be shy when it suits them.
Yep.
Yeah, and then it ends, or not ends, but then at one point...
It stops.
Yeah. yeah, I mean, at one point, the pregnant woman has to spread open her legs, and the doctor yells in between her legs on a megaphone telling the baby...
As you do, yeah.
As you do. That's how you talk to babies.
Yeah, that's how babies are delivered.
Calling the baby fake as hell, and how they can see right through you, and the baby dances. And they're able to get the baby out by... saying that they're going to go do karaoke, and then the baby comes out.
Yeah.
Congratulations, he's a nightmare.
Yeah.
What do we think of this?
It was so-so on it. It was missing a little something. Yeah.
It's an interesting concept, but yeah.
I would have liked a bigger ending.
Yeah, just a stronger. I mean, there's one... sketch towards the end that I really wish had a stronger ending. I thought it was just it felt like it suffered from the SNL US curse of not knowing how to end a sketch, but we'll get there. But I mean, I will say they did something kind of cool here that I don't think I've ever seen SNL in the US do, which is like right after the sketch was
have a
over,
bunch of British people in it.
Yeah, well that too. But no, like right after the sketch was over, Tina Fey jumps off the set, grabs a microphone, looks into the camera and says, ladies and gentlemen, you're wet leg.
And she's still in costume. We see her scurry over to, I wonder, I don't know if this aired without commercials in the UK. Cause I know like UK channels, they don't really break for commercials the way US channels do. I think most of the time.
Right.
I think they tend to show programs uninterrupted, but.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But I mean, like that part though was kind of cool, like a little almost like punk rock, where it's just like, oh yeah, I'm coming off this set. No, now here's your musical guest. Bam.
Yeah, that
like,
was neat.
That's kind of cool. Yeah, so let's get into a musical guest. The band Wet Leg. They did two songs, "Man Get Out" and "Catch These Fists," both off of their sophomore album "Moisturizer" that came out last year.
And okay. I did not get that the first song was "Man Get Out" because it's all written as one word. On YouTube, and I was like, Manchtout? What is this? Like,
Magnet Town? What is this?
Lahat Helion? What is
this? Oh!
I don't understand when you run the words together.
I'm pretty sure.
Try to capitalize all those suckers.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's Man Get Out.
No, yeah. Man Get Out makes too much sense.
Man Get Out.
I feel stupid for not realizing that.
Manchtout?
Manchtout. That's how I was reading it.
Your song's
dumb.
Your song is Mange Tout, right?
Mange Tout. I'm glad you gave the song titles.
Magneto UT? What?
Yeah. Magneto has a UTI. Oh,
oh
no.
Charles. I have a UTI, Charles.
Charles.
The humans
don't care that we have UTIs, Charles.
They'll never understand us, Charles, our UTIs.
You're a god among insects. So we got the Man Get Out and Catch These Fists. So I was not familiar with Wet Leg at all before. I'd never even heard of them before this. So I don't know if they're like just big in the UK. If I'm just totally out of touch. If it's some combination of both.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Probably. Probably all those things and more.
Yeah. I mean, I would say they probably are bigger in the UK. Although they have... made a bit of a splash here in the States. They've been on some late night shows and, this first song they performed, Man Get Out, was featured on, an episode of Heated Rivalry. So it got a little bit of a boost there.
Okay.
This song reminds me of some band from the 90s and I can't figure out who. It has like a 90s alt rock vibe to it with a little bit of, I don't know, maybe like pop singing or pop sensibilities to it. Like the singer has like this kind of breathy, slow, quiet singing voice, sultry type of style.
She enjoys crawling along the floor a lot.
Yes.
Like crawling along the floor and singing into fans.
Singing into fans, wearing a furry football padding. That seems to be her MO.
Yep.
But yeah, like, yeah, she does like a lot of that, a lot of writhing on the floor while her band rocks out with their
fair metal writhing. Yes.
Yeah. So it's an interesting dichotomy. But yeah, the songs aren't bad. I don't mind them.
I was okay. I think I enjoyed Man Get Out a little more than Catch These Fists, but,
Man Get Out is a little bit catchier. Yeah. Though it's kind of cool in Catch These Fists where she goes down to the audience and sits between two people. It's like, oh, okay. That's kind of rad. And, but yeah, overall, not a bad band. They're pretty all right. Next up, Weekend Update with Anya Magliano and Patty Young. Yeah, I was trying to figure out how can we do a Joe Che thing
Young. I mean, yeah, there's no real confusion about how to say Young.
But
Magliano, Anya Magliano.
Yeah. I don't know, nothing there. But I will give a tip of the hat to Mr. Patty Young for keeping his mustache. I mean, that dude has a mustache for days. It kind of reminded me of like Danny Aykroyd back in the olden days of the 70s.
Yeah, and you know, like some of the male cast members were doing like, you know, the 5 o'clock shadow thing, and I'm just like, wow, because I think Lorne usually does demand that folks be clean shaven to you know, give them the maximum amount of flexibility for who they can play and wear the fake beards and stuff like that.
It's like if you're on the Yankees, you have to get a haircut, you know, shaving a haircut.
Got to get rid of those sideburns.
Yep. Exactly.
If you're an Emil Joaquin, you know, you can't be keeping that mustache.
No, I gotta get rid of that soup strainer there, buddy.
Yeah, gotta get rid of that. I mean, otherwise Lorne could like fire you inside of a year.
Ooh, don't get me started. Don't do it.
Anyway, so it's interesting to hear them talk about like the news stories of the day from a British point of view. I liked how like they were talking about how the PM has sort of agreed to give their consent on aiding in Iran, and Trump is like, consent? Now you've taken all the fun out of it.
Oof. Yeah, they really went hard at influencers too. Like when they're talking about like, you know, the influencers in Dubai, or you know, is we're trying to escape and struggling to flee. Uh-huh. And, you know, they must stress it's not all good news.
Yes. I
mean, if any influencers are killed, and we can only hope that they are, it'll be easy to identify by their dental record, the massive white teeth made in Turkey. God damn.
Yeah, they were going hard.
I did like the line, like, you know, they were there to evade income tax, and now they're evading incoming tax.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a line.
Yeah.
I was like, that's pretty clever.
And they also talked about how, you know, they're going to try to secure the Strait of Hormuz. And so they called in a guy from the British Navy, Captain Birdseye, the frozen foods guy.
Yeah. So I looked it up because, like, I wasn't familiar. But, yeah, Captain Birdseye is like a mascot for, like, you know, frozen, this brand of frozen foods over in the UK. It's basically like the Gordon Fisherman.
We have Birdseye frozen food stuff over here, don't we?
We do, but I don't think we have like a sea captain as the mascot or as a spokesman.
Maybe not. Maybe he's like an, Anyway, so he comes on and they're trying to ask him about Iran, and he keeps talking about eating fish fingers.
Yes. He keeps offering him fish.
As us Americans now.
Us Yankees.
Call them fish fingers.
Yeah, we call them fish sticks.
Yeah.
Get it right. America.
I don't know which sounds more appetizing. Neither one sounds terribly good.
Yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, I liked them. Just like douse them in ketchup and shove them in my mouth for lunch. But yeah, nowadays I have more refined palate. I'm like,
sure.
Fish fingers. Yuck.
Yeah. And then eventually it comes out that Captain Birdseye is talking about fish fingers, and his mascot duties are just a cover for his black ops works.
Yeah.
And he opens up his shirt and he's got a necklace of human fingers.
Yes. And it talks about how he used to open up a Serbian's neck with a machete. Mm-hmm. And he's saying all this as his mustache is falling off.
Yes. Yeah. There were a couple little technical screw-ups here and there, which I'm just like, I mean, I'm sure that's like just growing pains and they'll get over that with time. So, yeah.
They're still figuring it out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, and they also had some pretty strong jokes for Prince Andrew because, Prince Andrew's new residence is named Marsh Farm, named after the nearby marsh where his body will be found.
Wow.
Wow.
And like leading into that, Anya said like, oh, you know, you're not going to like some of the things you're about to hear, Prince Andrew. But just remember, I'm older than I look.
I was like, are they ballsier than Jost and Che?
Yeah, I think they kind of are. But yeah, the named after the nearby marsh where his body will be found. That was hardcore.
Wow. Yeah.
I think that was my favorite joke of update. Their update was like a bit shorter than the US update. I mean, ours spans like probably about 15 minutes worth of the show.
Yeah.
And this was probably not even 10.
Yeah, no, they got in and got out, but still what they put in there, there's some haymakers are up in this motherfucker.
Yeah.
Oof. There was that one about if Andrew's charged, found guilty, and put in prison, will be able to keep his mouth shut. I sure hope not, said his cellmate's penis.
Yep.
What the fuck?
That was a prison rape joke.
Good grief. Good lord, man.
Yep.
Woo!
Yep.
Coming in hot.
Mm-hmm.
Coming in hot. Shakespeare.
Yeah, we got, we're in Stratford-upon-Avon, and so we got William Shakespeare, and he's leaving a family. He's just like, oh, goodbye, everyone. I'm going to London for a production of The Tempest. And he says goodbye, and then he comes back a few months later, and he's got a...
An earring.
What do they call it? Like a slutty little earring?
Oh, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And then he leaves again for London for the staging of Macbeth. He comes back with a slutty little chain.
Yeah. Basically, he's also got like a collar and shorts. He got, you know, one of those frilly Shakespearean style collars.
Yeah. Basically, every time he goes to London, he comes back a different man because the city changes you.
Yeah. He's a little more metrosexual, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
A bit more of a fancy lad.
Yeah. And then he goes away for another one of his.
He goes back for Henry IV, part Henry 2, Fourth. Henry V.
Yes.
And he comes back, played by a different actor.
That threw me off. I was like, wait, what are we doing now?
Yeah. And he comes back, and he's on a motorized scooter. He's got like a little tote bag for Anne Boleyn.
He's got sunglasses.
Yeah.
Been doing ecstasy.
Yeah.
Like Charlie XCX. Oh, I mean, Charlie 31, whatever XCX means in Roman numerals. You know, he's in his glow up era.
Uh-huh.
His son, Hamnet, has gotten into his bag of cocaine and he passes out.
Yeah, and we see the actor playing Hamnet who's like, I think, kind of crawling back on camera because I guess he went off stage briefly to get the fake cocaine on his mouth.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So that's the other thing. Yeah.
We saw him like kind of crawling back, and I was like, oh, there's a little technical screw-up that we don't usually see on SNL US.
Yeah. And then Shakespeare's like, oh, he'll be fine. He's just a K-hole. And then it ends with like all these rave kids that Shakespeare met in London, and somebody dresses Charlie XCX dancing, and everybody just dances.
This was one of those sketches. It's just more weird than funny.
Yeah. Like, I don't know.
I don't know what they were going for here.
I felt like the pacing was kind of off in this one. It never quite came together. The fact that there's like three other people in the sketch that don't really have any lines, I thought was weird.
They had a cast member playing one of Shakespeare's family.
Like a daughter.
Yeah. Bemgoboi, I have trouble with that last name.
Oh boy.
I apologize. And I don't think she had a single line in the sketch, which is just weird.
Yeah, I mean, maybe she had lines, but they got cut at the last minute, but they still put her in. Yeah. But either way, it's kind of distracting just to have somebody there and just without saying anything at all. I mean, unless they're extras. If they're extras, that makes sense. But
No, but I'm pretty sure that was a cast member. So
yeah. If you're a cast member and you're in a sketch, you got to have some lines.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the US SNL, they're doing a thing where they try to give everybody some sort of character to play. And it's like, no, sometimes you just got to be a spear carrier, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, the sketch isn't about this person and their little quirk. And we don't need to give a quirk to everybody in the sketch. Some people can just be a straight man. But
right. Absolutely. Yeah,
I didn't get. And honestly, another thing that kind of weirded me out was like, I was like, they're getting the Shakespeare plays out of order. Cause like he says, like, well, I'm off to go to the premiere of The Tempest. And then later he says, like, well, I'm off to for my new play, Macbeth. And I'm like, wait. The Tempest was like the last play that Shakespeare wrote.
I think they're hoping that no one catches that. Like, yeah.
These, I don't, but I'm just like.
These people don't read. It's okay. Yeah, but
put them in order, man. You can use the same plays. Just put them in chronological order, man.
A quick Wikipedia search could have cleared all this up.
I mean, like, literally all you have to do is you don't put The Tempest first, okay?
Yeah.
Put The Tempest at the end.
But yeah, I don't know. I thought the sketch was kind of a dud. And
yeah,
it
did nothing for me.
Yeah, so.
I don't like it when the show is more weird than funny, and this was definitely more weird than funny.
So. Yeah, so our first SNL UK dud.
Yeah, so, you know, fuck them.
Fuck. Yep, this show's bound to fail. Ain't going nowhere.
Yeah. This show's going nowhere fast. This show's doomed to fail. Next, we had Paddington Bear Experience. Paddington... supremely popular character. Everybody and their brother loves Paddington too.
So popular.
I think I read that it's finally joined the Letterboxd 1 million watched club.
Good.
Because everybody just loves that movie to death.
Like, do I have to watch it? Because even here, people in the States love Paddington Bear. They're like, oh my God, this movie's amazing. And like, I see the trailer, I'm like, really? This is... I guess.
I haven't gotten around to seeing it either, and I'm not opposed to watching it. I haven't gotten around to it.
I don't know. I just saw the trailer. I was like, this looks all right. It looks cute, but like people are treating it like
they're adorable and endearing. There's an account I follow on Blue Sky. There's somebody who's like, I Photoshop Paddington into another movie until I forget.
Oh boy.
And it's just a fun, goopy page to follow. But
okay.
Yeah, but here the twist is, it's the Paddington Bear Experience, but they've hired a real bear.
Right.
So the bear is just maiming people.
Yeah, so it's like all these families and a bachelorette party just going into this Paddington Bear Experience. And like you said, it's an actual live bear with a hat glued on its head, and he's just mauling everyone.
Yeah.
I think Tina Fey is the one who's heading up this experience. And yeah, we wanted to hire the actress from the play, but she wanted too much money. We saw this bear at the zoo, and it's like, all right, yeah, let's just use that.
Yeah.
Then they did some testimonials. One person said, oh, I lost half my face, but I made some memories.
Yeah, and like half the people they're interviewing are bloody. I enjoyed this because it was just such a fun, goofy idea.
It's a wild one, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I liked it. You know, you want the weird stuff towards the end of the show, so.
Yes, for sure. I mean, the last sketch.
I'd say this qualified.
I would say the last sketch is even a little weirder, but we'll. We'll get
I would
to that.
Say so.
Yeah. We'll get to that. But I didn't have too many. It's pretty in and out. There's not too much to talk about. But yeah,
it's pretty straightforward. I mean, it's just the gag of a bear mauling people. But I mean, come on, you can't go wrong with a bear in a comedy sketch, right?
Right.
Tina Fey even made fun of that in 30 Rock, where you know she was like, all the sketches that guys write are bears and robots. You remember that T. Sean Shannon sketch, Bear City?
Bear
City, Bear City.
Oh yeah! Wow.
Yeah.
I do. Wow, that's a. Whew,
and
that's
just
a
like guys in bear suits, like being businessmen and going and stuff.
Yeah,
it's a weird one.
It was a weird one. Just a bunch of bears.
Yeah. So I bet Tina Fey loved seeing the pitch for this. She's like, God damn it. I crossed the damn ocean and I can't even get away from the bear sketches.
Can't get away from these bears. next up, Changing Room. I'm calling this one Changing Room.
I also call it Changing Room.
Hey, how about that?
Yeah, great minds.
Nice.
Great minds think alike.
Yeah.
Tina Fey, she's going to Changing Room in a clothing store. She needs to get some new bras. And there's somebody there who offers to help measure her for her new bras.
Because
that's the thing that happens.
I don't know. Ladies, let us know.
I tried to get that job, but they turned me away and they put me on a list. I'm not allowed in that store anymore. I don't get what that's about. I don't think it's fair.
Yeah, there's a picture of you on their walls. Do not hire this man.
Yeah, do not hire this man. Do not let him offer to size your breasts by feel.
Yes,
he does not work here.
Exactly. Oh, John. Oh, boy. But basically in this sketch, like, Tina Fey plays somebody who's having a bad year. She's divorced and saggy and alone, very low confidence.
She needs a pick-me-up.
Yeah, so the woman, played by Emma Seedy, she measures her top, and she's like, oh, you're a 38B, love. Yeah. And, Tina is like, well, you know, I guess that's not really a sexy bra size. I guess it's fine, I guess. And then the woman offers to zhuzh it up a bit for the surrounds.
Yeah.
Which was like, huh? And then she said, well, I offer a service where I'd loudly make a point at to mention how big your bra size is for everyone outside to hear.
Yeah.
And she does
is
that.
Is that a thing? Are women like that impressed with other women's breast sizes?
I didn't think so.
Do they care?
It's not like dudes with dick size, right? No, I don't think.
Or dudes with breast size.
Or dudes with breast size, yes. Yeah. I got this sweet, these sweet rack. These tasty knockers.
So she pretends that Tina's character is actually a 28G.
Which, that's insane.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, Crocky, they got a real weight to them.
Yeah.
You nearly poked me all out.
Yeah, yeah. And then we've got Reggae Jean Page making a cameo at the end, and he offers to buy Tina Fey a drink.
Yeah, because we also learned that Tina Fey was, she asked the woman whose name is Juggs.
Yes.
Which, I guess, she wants to know if Juggs can zhuzh up her life for the surrounds, because Tina Fey was responsible for editing the BAFTA Awards, and her life has been going great ever since.
Oh, yeah, because of that whole thing.
Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that. That was a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, we had the fun of some N-bombs there. And yeah. Woo!
Yeah, that was fun times. Fun times.
Yeah, yeah, good times. Good times.
Yeah, yeah, but then Reggae Jean Page comes on in to try some underwear. Tina asks him, what are you doing here? And it's like, well, it's a long and sexy story. And then she asks Tina out for a drink, and they go out for drinks, and she says, thank you for changing my life. And that's it. It's
a weird one, right?
It's kind of charming, but I don't know. Like, I feel like there's the logic of it is kind of off. It's like you said, like, do women really care about boob size like that? And like, I mean, as soon as...
I don't know.
I mean, but and also, as soon as Tina steps out of the changing room, people can see, like, oh, she's clearly not a 28G.
Yeah, they're all reacting to her.
Yeah, like, she looks...
It's not like she stuffed her bra or anything.
Yeah, she didn't stuff her bra or anything. She just...
And I had no idea what size she is, but she is obviously not a G cup.
Yeah, like, I mean, look, I'm no bra expert, but I think I'd know a G when I saw one, if I saw
one. Yeah.
So, like, as soon as
G's are like the size of a head.
Yeah, exactly. Like basketballs. Like, come on, man. As soon as she steps out, the jig is up. Like, you know, like, oh, that's not a G. Yeah. So, like, that logic was kind of off. Ultimately, I thought this was slightly charming, but not super funny.
Yeah, it didn't make me laugh a great deal. You know, it was you know, it wasn't like that skin cream commercial.
That's a banger, baby.
But, yeah.
Yeah. So. So in our final sketch of the night, 45 seconds with 4 Acres.
Mm-hmm.
This is an interesting one because it stars, our cast member, George 4 Acres.
Mm-hmm.
And he just looks into the camera and starts singing this song. What kind of Irish is your granddad? What kind of Irish is your gramps? Is he this? And then he does an impression of an Irish grandfather, and it's his impression of it. And then it goes right back into singing. What kind of Irish is your granddad? What kind of Irish is your gramps? Is he this? And then he goes into another one. And then he goes right back again into what kind of Irish is your granddad? Is he this? And then he starts singing this Irish song, actually pretty well, kind of beautifully, mm-hmm. singing his Irish song. And then Nicola Coughlin from the monologue comes, fellow Irish woman, comes and joins him in singing this song. And then he goes, hey, it's Nicola from the Dairy Girls. Mm-hmm. And she says, actually, it's the Dairy Girls. And he goes,
it's just Dairy Girls.
Dairy Girls.
No, D.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
It's just Dairy Girl. Then he goes, it doesn't matter, Nicola. None of this is real. Good night. God bless. Love you all. And then that's it. And while Nicola looks like she's having an existential crisis, it's like, oh, my God, none of this is real. And just like having a meltdown in the background. This was an odd one.
It is an odd one. Yeah. I don't know if I needed to have an Irish granddad to really get this or if it was just like lost in translation across the pond or.
Yeah, this one seemed like a very British sketch, a very Irish-centric set. But yeah. I did find this one charming. I did kind of like the absurdity of it.
I do like him as a performer. I think he's one of the performers I like the most.
I would agree, yeah. I think, like, he... I mean, again, I don't know any of these cast members that well, but George 4 Acres is, like, he's my standout performer so far.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm keeping my eye out on him.
I like Anya Magliano.
Oh yeah, Anya's good. Patty Young, I think, is interesting because he has a kind of a funny looking face.
Yeah.
And
the others, I'm still just kind of getting to know.
Hamid, I kind of like. I think Animation.
Yeah.
But 45 seconds with 4 Acres. I kind of like this. I kind of like this. The more I think about it, it's...
Yeah, it's kind of the UK equivalent of what
the which one? The thing?
No. The, like, at the end of the show, we're doing the guy from Please Don't Destroy, whose name I'm blanking on. Marshall.
Martin.
John Higgins. Yes.
Martin Hurley.
Yes, Martin. I don't know why I was blanking on Martin Hurley's name. You know, it's kind of like the things that he's doing at the end of SNL these days.
Yeah, it was an interesting one. It's definitely like absurdist, kind of offbeat, quirky humor, but I didn't mind it. Like, I was like, okay, this is good. Like once I kind of locked into what he was doing, I was able to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's our very first episode, our debut episode of SNL UK.
Our big debut, yes.
Debut.
Doing debut.
Sexy. Yow. I liked it.
I enjoyed it more than not.
It's
a mixed bag, like SNL always is, but I feel like there's some potential there. There's room for improvement. It wasn't heinous.
Right.
I thought it translated to the British idiom pretty well.
Yeah.
And I think as time goes on, they'll find their own voice more and more.
So. I would agree. To quote you, it wasn't heinous. There was a lot. There was more in there that I liked than didn't. It wasn't all bangers. There was some stuff that was kind of iffy. But there's room for growth. I think there's a lot of potential here. And
I think they've got some talent. So
yeah. Like you can't judge an entire like show off of the very first episode. I mean, if you went back and looked at the first episode of the US SNL, which we did, episode 100, go back and listen.
We did.
Like that first episode was kind of, touch and go. It wasn't perfect.
I mean, that was really all over the place because they didn't entirely know what the show would be or should be.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, here, they have 50 years worth of the SNL formula to kind of emulate. So
yeah, absolutely. So they already have a leg up on that. So, but yeah, I feel like there is room for growth. There's a lot of things in here I like. I mean, those Weekend Update jokes, hoo boy, those are fucking diabolical. So like, I look forward to it. Like, I think there's a lot of good stuff here, and I look forward to the future of SNL UK. I mean, I don't know if we'll talk about every episode on this podcast.
I'm not even sure if I'm going to watch this every week. That might be like just a little too much SNL in my life. But okay. I mean, I can see myself periodically checking out, dipping in and out.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there's a host that I'm interested in.
Yeah. Well,
they've announced the hosts and musical guests for the next couple shows. We got Jamie Dornan, the the guy from the 50 Shades of Grey.
50 Shades of Grey and, yeah, 50 Shades of Grey.
50 Shades of Grey and 50 Shades of Grey.
50 Shades of Grey. 50 Shades of Grey Part 2, still graying.
Yeah. 50 Shades of Grey 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah.
And then a musical guest, Wolf Alice. And then after that, Riz Ahmed, who's a British actor and rapper.
He has the Riz.
Yeah. And then musical guest, Kazabian. So they're coming up the next couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. So
we'll see where this goes. I don't know how many episodes they're doing in a season. I mean, I know British TV seasons typically. It says it's going to be an 8-episode first series. So I guess they're just going through till like May.
Yeah, I think they were going to do 6, but then they got an extension, so it'll go up to 8.
Okay. All right.
So the network feels good about them. They feel positive. So.
Mm-hmm. And the reviews have been decent at least. So
positive. It's not a stinkeroo. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Onward and upward. But enough about us. What do you guys think? What do you the listeners, the fine listeners of this podcast think? So well, let's check it out. Well, our good friend Lee Hot the Lion saying, "Well, surprise! I liked it. I thought it was cool that they can curse. The sketches were all right. They kept looking at the cue cards, which they did, but the Weekend Update had some bite to it. Other than that, it was probably top 5 of SNL we have seen so far this year. Also, happy belated birthday to the Big D."
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think that means me, not
the... Yeah, no, I think that not, yeah, I think that does mean you.
Not Yeah, but not the...
Yeah, I don't think we're zhuzhing up anything.
Yeah. Yeah. for the surrounds.
Yeah. Our friend Nick Store says, "We're grading this on a curve, yes? I mean, if this had been regular SNL, we'd be ready to sign its death warrant.
Ooh.
But it's not, and it had promised, surely. It's finding its feet. It was a good starmer. I liked Weekend Update. What kind of Irish is your grandpa was what I wanted from a British SNL." Yeah, I mean, with the Prime Minister Starmer, I am not qualified to say how good the impression was at all, so... Just because I have a limited familiarity with him, so
yeah, it just seemed like he played him like a cowardly man, like I said, Penfold from Danger Mouse. That seemed to be the to be the blueprint.
Shush.
I don't know what to do, Lemmy. He's going crumbs. He's going to yell at me. What else? Who else we got? Dan Tappan saying woo. Can't wait to see how it translates for you. I reckon it'll be a bit uncanny valley.
Yeah, and he is in Cardiff from London. What? So yeah, so he's a British listener.
Hello, hello, hello.
Oh, yeah, you couldn't resist.
I couldn't. I'm sorry. I apologize. All right, that's it. That's the last one for the last one for this episode.
So a little bit, yeah. I mean, it did feel a little like an Earth 2 version of SNL at times. We also had our friend Jeff Knapp. Oh, I just lost it over on Facebook. I had it up.
Oop.
And
give me
a second. I'll get it.
Okay. All right. Well, while you're getting that, we can tell you to follow us on the Blue Skies at SNL Nerds and donate to our Patreon at non-productive.com and listen to this on the YouTube, on our YouTube page, non-productive, and you can follow me on all the social medias at Dan Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible.
Yeah, and you can follow me on the socials at Trumbull Comic. That's T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L and the word comic. So I got Jeff Knapp's comment up that's on Facebook when I shared this on Facebook. He says, I didn't get through it. Some of it is obviously lost on me as a Yank. So the cold open with Starmer trying to get out of speaking to Trump was funny in concept. But since I have no working knowledge of Starmer, no idea if it was funny on those merits. Monologue had Tina Fey doing the best she could. Standard questions from the audience with famous plant spit with Graham Norton batting cleanup and taking the stage with Tina to ask her a bunch of questions, which ended with her spouting a bunch of UK comedy catchphrases to prove her bona fides, which was pretty good. I anticipate the initial reveal of the host before they descend the stairs to become insufferably self-indulgent with people doing dances and poses while on the upper landing. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah, so they got the host kind of going down a staircase, and you can kind of see them through the window when they're heading down. So
yeah, I thought that was kind of neat.
Interesting. Yeah, so yeah, maybe it will become insufferably self-indulgent. Who knows?
Maybe, I don't know.
He says, the underage anti-aging ad was funny, if not 30 seconds too long.
Oof.
I didn't think that was too long.
Yeah, wow, this guy's coming in hot with his stuff.
Dancing fetus lacked a real payoff of an ending, but I didn't mind it that much. I was interested in update because I really like Amya Magalano after seeing her series on Taskmaster, and I had no prior knowledge of her co-host. So if there was a pre-existing dynamic, it was lost on me. Felt like an imitation of our update, and Amya might have winked at the camera one too many times. I think it sometimes plays better when one is cheeky without drawing attention to it. I pretty much tapped out after that. So.
Oof! All right.
So,
wow.
You know, Jeff, a little mixed on. Yeah, we gotta have Jeff on the show, on the podcast one of these days.
Yes. Okay. Sure. Yeah.
Sounds like figure out something. Yeah. To do. Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Let's have him on. Let's. You know, he's. Yeah. Let's do it.
Jeff, you're officially invited.
Boom. Done.
Yeah.
Come on down.
So yeah, you know, yeah, and please, yeah, check us out on the Blue Sky, on the Facebook. Go over to YouTube. You can find all the archive of all our past episodes of the podcast. If this is the first time listening to the podcast, welcome. Thank you for listening. Thank you for rating and reviewing and telling your friends and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, and should we let the people know what we're going to be doing next week?
Let's let the people know what we're doing next week. Why don't you do that? Why don't you tackle that?
Yeah, next week we're gonna go back to the old way of doing things, talking about an SNL related movie. We're gonna talk about Anchorman 2. The legend continues. We're gonna go back, watch it. I remember when the movie came out, it didn't do great. We're gonna go back and see if there's like was it as stinky as people made it out to be, or is it actually better than people thought it was? So, yeah, next week, Anchorman 2. We're doing it. Bam.
Yeah, Anchorman 2. Looking forward to it. Covering that.
Uh-huh.
So that'll be fun. I remember liking this. I remember this being a pretty good comedy sequel. I haven't watched it in a little while, so it'll be interesting to see how that holds up.
It's been a minute, but I remember when it came out. I don't think it did as well in the theaters, and like people were a little bit cooler on it than they were the first one, if I recall correctly. So either way, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it had a warmer reception than I remember. But I don't know. We'll check it out and we'll see. We'll dissect this baby and serve it up to you, the listeners, hot and fresh on the SNL Nerds Podcast.
Yes. So yeah, join us next week for Anchorman 2. But until then, Nerds out!
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.